What Witch, This, That, or the Other? From Bonnaroo to Coachella, traversing the music festival landscape can be tricky. That's where we come in with high fives for everyone. The What Podcast with Brad Barry, Lord Taco, dedicated to exploring the entire festival scene.
Brad has worked in the radio industry for more than 20 years and currently lives in Brooklyn, where he is program director for three stations, including one in New York, one in Detroit, and one in Miami.
Barry's been a reporter for the Chattanooga Times Free Press, covering all aspects of the entertainment industry since 1987. That's before you were born.
Lord Taco, the smart guy who makes these podcasts on our website at thewhatpodcast.com work, also really good at identifying babies, loves blue-haired moms, PBR, and his beautiful Volkswagen bus.
We all fell in love with the Bonnaroo Festival years ago, not only because of the amazing bands that play there every year, but also because of the incredible community spirit that has developed around it. Radiate positivity.
And we really like talking about the inside baseball stuff when it comes to putting on a huge music festival. So join us.
You can hear the What Podcast on the Consequence Podcast Network or anywhere you find your favorite podcasts.
Hey pod people, Engineer Adam here, jumping in for a quick second to let you know about the brand new all-in-one platform for all of you creative podcasters out there. Anchor makes it easier than ever to make a podcast. It's free to use and has all the creation tools you need to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Plus, Anchor will get your podcast set up on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are found. Even better, Anchor helps you connect with sponsors, even if you're just starting out. It's the perfect choice for podcasters, so make sure to check it out. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. That's anchor.fm. Back to the show.
The Star Wars universe is constantly expanding.
But how the heck are you going to keep tabs on it without a holocron? And where in the rim can I score the juiciest news and rumors?
Ah, you seek State of the Empire, Consequence of Sound's Star Wars speculation podcast, where we look for news in Alderaan places.
We dig into the Sarlacc pit of the internet for the hottest intel in the galaxy far, far away. Make Indiana Jones inquiries and keep watch for the latest on Willow.
Find us on consequenceofsound.net or wherever you procure fine podcasts. It's the show you're looking for. Consequence Podcast Network.
Hello to all of you splendid pod people out there. I'm your host, Leor Phillips, and this is another installment of This Must Be the Gig. Your little backstage pass to the world of live music. Each and every week, we bring you a fascinating conversation from the beating heart of live music and performance. That could really mean us chatting to musicians, a festival founder about the lineup and why they curate such a lineup, why they do this job, a choreographer, a comedian, an actor, really anyone obsessed with performance and live music and festivals and the live music and performance scene in the way that we are. But before we dig into this week's fantastic interview, let's check in with our constant companion here at TMBTG Studios, Engineer Adam. Hello.
Hey. Hey, it's our catchphrase.
When
hello,
did you
hey.
Get promoted from engineer to co-host?
Oh, man. I think that's your job to decide. So I think maybe we should have like a performance review sometime in the next few months.
Sure.
Get back at me. See how you feel.
It will be on the scale of how many pieces of sweeties you bring into the studio at a time.
How many M&Ms can I fit in my pockets?
Yeah. Ugh. I don't want your manky, danky M&M pocket M&Ms. So what's been going on?
I've just been here celebrating Kendrick Lamar's Oscar nomination.
I'm so excited.
Did you ever think we'd say Kendrick Lamar, Oscar nominee?
I did, actually. I did. What was that for?
Well, that was for Best Original Song for one of the amazing songs on the Black Panther soundtrack.
Yeah. Although I feel like all the nominations were kind of strange. I feel like they left out, obviously there's a whole controversy of why Oscars don't award any accolades to horror movies and why they have totally forgotten about things that came out in May. So there's a whole politics that, you know, in terms of timing that impacts how it's viewed, which I feel is ridiculous.
And while I was really glad that Spike Lee got nominated for the first time, I was sad to see Boots Riley did not get nominated.
A lot of movies in general were also left out. Sorry to Bother You.
Exactly.
Boots. One of the most fantastic. And Eighth Grade.
Eighth Grade was fantastic.
And Hereditary, which I can't even say because I can see Toni Collette over there in the corner. I can see her.
I keep forgetting that was this year.
Yeah. And I just...
Where's my man Colin Stetson's nomination?
Yeah, exactly. That was one of the most unforgettable scores, even though it absolutely has haunted my being, my furniture, my bathroom, my kitchen.
But let's get back to Kendrick. King Kendrick.
King Kendrick.
He's got some competition.
Yeah,
he's going up against Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper,
who are Hollywood darlings right now. And I feel like it's kind of hard to beat that duo in terms of not necessarily the substantive amount of weight in their duo-ness.
I think I hear what you're saying. It's not necessarily that you're saying it's a better song. It's just that, you know, how are you going? That's star power. That's attention.
I also just feel like they could get it any year. It's this is not the time, you know?
Yes.
Although I love Lady Gaga, and I think that Bradley Cooper did an amazing job, and Mark Ronson and the crew on that song. I feel like...
Give it to Kendrick.
Just do it. But also in the realm of surprises, we got big announcements from two ends of the pop spectrum this week. Ariana Grande detailed the track listing of her brand new album. And we got some Vampire Weekend teasing new music. Weird couple to put in one sentence.
You know, you say that, but the more I think about it, the more I think they belong together. Ariana Grande.
And Vampire Weekend.
No. I mean, there's some sweet simplicity to their music, but also some interesting complexity to
it. The other day, I saw on my twice a week check-in on Twitter, I saw that somebody started a thread of hashtag, what was the band that you saw when they weren't big yet?
Yeah.
And Vampire Weekend, I saw them... It was now 11 years ago at Rock Werchter in Belgium. Probably anybody who speaks Dutch, German, or what's the official language of Belgium? French.
It seems like it would be French.
Yeah. I'm sure they are embarrassed by me. I can't even speak English, let alone any of those languages right now. Anyway, it's probably pronounced Werchter. 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 Anyway, it's an amazing festival if any of you want to go to a festival in June. It's amazing. And I saw Vampire Weekend there. They were playing at the same time as somebody else. And there was nobody in the tent. They were playing at a tiny tent.
Wow.
And somebody turned around and was like, who the fucking hell are these bunch of dickheads? And I was like, this is an amazing band.
That person had some real problems with vulgarity.
Also, yes, very. If I spoke French, I would say something.
I think my answer...
Omelette du fromage.
I mean, it's kind of cheating, but I got to see St. Vincent open for Arcade Fire on the Black Mirror tour.
That's not kind of cheating.
I mean, you know... When you're opening for a band as big as Arcade Fire were even back then.
But I think the question was positioned as a before they broke.
Yeah. Well, it was St. Vincent, I think, immediately after the Mary.
Are you sure Arcade Fire weren't opening for St. Vinny?
I am 100% sure.
Are you sure?
I went to two of three nights at the Chicago Theater. The other openers were Electro Lane, if I'm not mistaken.
Let's talk about this week's guest. The wondrous... The incredible, the...
Australian.
Incredibly talented.
Oh, sorry.
Courtney Barnett.
Yeah, Courtney Barnett is incredible. She's this really amazing, I hesitate to say singer-songwriter because that usually conjures, you know, folky connotations. But she does have this really amazing focus on writing heartfelt but tongue-in-cheek and witty lyrics. She's got releases called Sometimes I Sit and Think and Sometimes I Just Sit and A Sea of Split Peas.
What would your alternative title for that be?
Oh, for me?
Sometimes I sit and think, sometimes I just sit.
I would say, sometimes I sit and think, sometimes I sit, but I'm always thinking.
Yeah. That's good.
But she really broke into the scene a few years ago with that album, Pedestrian at Best. Maybe one of my favorite songs of the last 5 years. It's just so raucous, but then also, I don't want to say funny, but that's always the line that she rides, is that she has this sort of brilliant way of pulling unexpected surprises that still hit an emotional mark.
And kind of sarcastically, but in a really self-deprecating way.
Absolutely.
But allowing us, obviously, to enter into that and make fun of ourselves whilst doing so, which I think is really important. That's
a perfect encapsulation.
Yeah.
And then she also recorded an album with another person who that could be an encapsulation of, Kurt Vile. 2017, they put out A Lot of Sea Lice.
Love that record. We chatted about it a little bit during the interview. I won't give much away. But they were, like, on that album, like, two cute foxes darting around and playing in a little meadow. I don't know if that's like
I love that. That is so perfect because, you know, that really describes the sound of their guitars too, and really sort of wrapped around each other and chased each other in these little interesting licks. And then also each of their voices is sort of lazy and honeyed. I like it. I like that description.
It's just, it's intimate. I feel like both of them make music that is intimate but not evasive, you know?
And then she really doubled down on that feeling last year with Tell Me How You Really Feel, which hit those same notes but really addressed head on.
That was one of my favorite albums from last year.
Really addresses the chaos and oppression of today's society without changing who she is, which is a really impressive feat.
And she's also been touring the world since, but luckily we caught her while at home on a brief but much-deserved break. So in this chat, we cover the concert from Australian band Magic Dirt that opened up her mind, the open mics that changed her world, and also the experience of putting in the work instead of just waiting for art to strike.
And once you've heard the entire thrilling chat, leave us a note about it on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at
TMBTGpod.
TMBTGpod. I feel like we say it fast every time. Let's slow it down. TMBTGPOD. But better yet, leave your best concert experience, your first concert experience, as a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. We will shout you out here on the show.
And one more thing, if you want an artist to appear on this podcast and be a guest, then let us know. Lately, we've had a lot of private messages about the different types of people that others are wanting us to chat to and delve into their lives. So let us know, but on a public platform.
I got
so that we can have a conversation.
I got 3 requests for Aerosmith today.
Oh, okay.
People, what happened? Why are people into Aerosmith today?
Well, I was thinking about that Pink video. The other day. It's a great fucking video.
Maybe it's been Pink is my favorite, into the cultural color.
Also, I hate that I've dropped the U in color. That's just a side note. If anybody wants to know, it's because Americans don't, they have something against U's. Favor, color, neighbor.
That doesn't make any sense.
Also, why a Z instead of an S? Or is it the other way around?
Yeah, it's a Z.
Anyway,
instead of an S.
You complicate my life, you. You Americans. So I'm actually officially from today not going to do anything about it.
Hey.
Just an observation. Anyway, tell me how you really feel. 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 This is me and Courtney. Enjoy. Are you based in Melbourne now?
Oh, no, yeah. I've been in Melbourne for maybe 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Gosh, it's so beautiful there. Yeah. It reminded me a lot of home in Cape Town. I don't know if you've been to South Africa before.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, Melbourne, like, I think what is that area that I stayed with my friend? It was St. Kilda? Is that right? Am I saying it?
Oh, yeah, nice.
It's like all beachy and really lovely and really calm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I remember.
Oh, that's good.
So it's quite a nice moment as well to talk to you now, because I suppose usually a lot of press is done before an album is out and or obviously whilst you're on tour, which I know you're still touring and you have a lot coming up. But what are you, so other than being in your bed in Melbourne, what are you up to? Is this your relaxation time, or are you still working?
It's kind of, yeah, I mean, I guess we start tour again this weekend.
Oh, wow, okay.
But, yeah, but this has kind of been, I guess it's been a kind of break period, but, I think I'm not 100% great at doing absolutely nothing, so... I've got some things, projects and stuff I'm working on, and then I help run Milk Records, a record label, and so I'm kind of at the warehouse a lot of the time, updating that stuff, and it's been good. I've been kind of learning how to take time for myself, I guess, and just like lie around and read books and turn my phone off, and that's a really nice kind of thing to do.
It's hot, but I understand, like I kind of empathize with the fact that it's difficult to just do nothing, especially when it's the juxtaposition of doing nothing and your life is so largely extreme. So, you know, touring and all that kind of stuff is really intensified. And obviously when you're driven to make something, there's like this urgency. So when you have nothing, it's kind of, I can imagine. I don't know. That's how it's like for me. I can't really just sit and just do nothing, it's difficult.
It's interesting, isn't it? I think I do that. I'm like, I'm so busy. I've got so much on. I wish I could just do nothing. And then when I do nothing, or when I have nothing on, I run around, you know, pace back and forth. Like, what am I doing with my life?
I mean, the great thing about creating and writing, and especially as you mentioned, Milk Records and being involved and there's always that outlet for everything. So if there's something that you want to talk about, you just create a place for it to go. So when you're doing nothing, where do you go? You know, that stagnant and that staleness gets difficult. But obviously it is really important, especially you've been touring now for so many years consecutively, I feel. I don't know. I just feel like the one year I saw you at Splendor in Australia, in Byron Bay, and then I saw you in the same year in Portugal. It's also time zones and a lot of touring, and also just creating is also moving, right? Just the act of creating is also movement.
Yeah. It's difficult. Yeah, definitely. And it's been nice, maybe with that little bit of kind of time, like downtime. I feel like I've felt very creative recently, which is nice. And I don't think it's the kind of thing, you know, that turns on and off. And, I don't really believe in the perfect, you know, environment for being creative. I try to just always, always be thinking and always be kind of working on something.
That's so interesting.
Whether it seems good or not. But I think then it takes away the pressure of, having the perfect room and the perfect desk and the perfect pen. And if you don't have those things, then you're lost.
Yeah.
But it's been nice lately feeling extra.
Do you feel like you started out like that, having those routines and needing that special place to write, or having, you know, peace and quiet in the home, whatever sort of writer rituals, if I can call them that, which sounds a bit gross, but you know, those things that you pick up when you're first starting. Did you feel like you started out like that, or have you always just been very adaptable to your space?
I think I've kind of always been adaptable, mostly because I've had to. Like, I've never really had a space that's consistent or, and, you know, there were like years of my life where I was moving every year or, you know, moving house or, and then I guess I started touring more and, yeah, it, I think that, maybe the only thing was that kind of like romantic idea of you know, letting the kind of creative like spirit come to you and just how like bullshit that is.
Do you feel it is?
This kind of
yeah.
I think the thing I realized was that you just need to turn up each day and sit there wherever you are and try to do something, and that's being creative, staring at a blank page, if nothing comes, at least you're kind of you know, taking the step to be there.
Yeah, and that sometimes is really difficult, right? Because when you're feeling any sort of feeling, it's hard sometimes if you aren't really, you're maybe not in the mood, or you know, exhaustion can get in the way. Relationships with family and, you know, friends, anybody that can get really in the way of that creative process. But, I mean, that's nice to hear you say, because I feel like a lot of people romanticize the act of writing, especially artists and people in the public eye. I feel like it's always quite a mystery. You know, people are like, oh, I walk around and it's just all the time and... but I need that one moment. And so it's quite nice to hear that, you know, you think it's kind of bullshit, which I totally agree.
I think the thing is, like, everyone is so different, you know? Like, there is totally no right or wrong way to be creative, because there's a billion, trillion different ways. And, you know, it's whatever works. And I think the thing is, as well, I have no idea what works or, like, how... like, I don't know when the good bits or the bad bits of my creative life come. All I know is that I don't know.
Yes, and you're figuring
that's kind
it
of
out.
The one consistent thing. The one consistent thing is that I have no idea what I'm doing. So I can do is just keep trying.
It's working. Don't ever find out what you're doing. But I suppose I'm always interested, especially just hearing you now, in what a person really needs to do what they do. You know, like what are the things that you have to have almost in order to write? Like if you can do it anywhere and if you can show up almost, what is the one thing then that you need? Is that a strange question? Because I was just wondering, and now
no, it's a really it's a great question, because when you really think about it, all you really need is a some sort of vessel to write.
Yeah,
you know, to record your thoughts into, whether it's a computer or a notepad or a dictaphone or a phone with notes. Really, that's the kind of only thing that we need. And the rest is kind of excuse making. That's how I feel about myself.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, I can't write until I get the ink for my typewriter arrives. Like, which is obviously procrastination.
Of course.
You know? I can't write until I get this new desk.
Yes.
because at the moment I'm working on a, you know, one of those fold-out trestle tables. And sometimes, you know, and most of it for me is excuse-making, and that kind of procrastination of knowing that if I sit there and write, maybe I won't come up with anything. So it's kind of like,
yeah,
it all kind of stems back to like a fear of failure.
Absolutely.
Or a fear of, you know, not producing anything.
Yeah, because you kind of look back at your work, and sometimes I find, especially with people who are really in touch with the work that they do from the core, you look back and you're like, what, how did I create that? What is, what, you know, it's difficult going forward when you almost have that, you have work behind you and you have a constant reminder of that work. But what is your relationship then to failure, I suppose? Do you, have you been conscious about having a better relationship toward it, or do you use that as the fuel toward, you know, whatever
toward
you're
failure?
Creating? Yeah.
I think it's a like consistent, thing that's there. And I think, I guess I've tried to, yeah, come to terms with what it means in the kind of bigger picture, or like not, I guess not to be afraid of it, even though that's a really hard thing to do. It's easy to kind of say, you know, that you're aware of it and not to be afraid. But in reality, I think so much of everything, you know, kind of circles around that fear of failure or not being good enough, or, you know, people not liking you, or, yeah, kind of, I don't know, in a creative sense. But, I think I do tend to be a kind of more negative person, but I try, you know, to kind of flip that around and just ignore it almost, and just kind of get on with it.
As my positive friend always says, it's not negative, you're just being realistic. It's like she, obviously she's so positive, she tries to turn it around. But I mean, sometimes
yeah.
It is very good to have that self-reflection and be self-aware, especially when you're so creative and you're, as I said earlier, it's the type of artist and the nature of what you do. Things have to be authentic, otherwise it won't feel that way, I'm sure, for you in the process. So, but it is difficult, especially nowadays. I can imagine, even just starting out now, like you've been doing this for a while now, can you imagine starting out now where Instagram is such a massive thing, where, you know, streaming is such a huge thing, although that was still big when you started, but I feel like there's been a huge shift where I can't even imagine being starting out now in the industry. You know, it must be really difficult and very, very challenging.
Yeah, it's kind of, I guess, yeah, it's a scary world. I watched this doco yesterday called Dancing the Invisible. It's about a film editor called Jill Bilcock, and she kind of said this thing about, I mean, yeah, she was talking about editing and editing films, but I kind of, she said this thing how we're all editors, and we, you know, we edit our life and the way we present our life, and I was, you know, thinking about that kind of social media connection and even writing, you know, what we leave in and out of our story and what
Absolutely.
We share with people. And it's, but yeah, I don't know. Social media lately just has made me feel so much anxiety.
I know.
I can't do it anymore.
I know. I feel exactly the same, but I feel like I've been struggling it since it all started. So like to whenever I joined Facebook all those years ago, and whenever I joined Twitter and Instagram. But I know that documentary, wasn't she from Australia? I don't want to say Melbourne, but I feel like she was from Melbourne. Yeah,
she,
in like the 60s or the 70s. I remember reading about her.
Yeah.
I haven't She's watched really the documentary, cool. but I love that idea. But obviously, I definitely don't want to get into a conversation about how terrible social media is, because I definitely feel like it has, I definitely feel like it has a beautiful way to connect people and give people who feel social anxiety the strength to speak up. But I certainly don't feel like, I feel like it's really rotten at the moment. At least I feel also just really, like, I don't tweet ever, which is like the worst part, because like what I do is based on being, you know, a tweeter, if I can call it that, you know, and I'm sure for you as well, you have to just keep in touch with fans and let everybody know what you're doing. So do you just not go on it when you're feeling anxious, or do you just force yourself to get comfy with it?
No, I think I just say when I'm doing shows and stuff.
Yeah, so like the bare minimum, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds fine. Again, it's exactly kind of why I started this show, is because live music and live performance is something that doesn't give a lot of people anxiety the way that the digital world does. So I'm sure that, you know, somewhere people find a relief in escaping, you know, in shows and going to still watch shows. Because I feel like I'm glad that that hasn't died, you know, because everything else kind of has changed and people are still going to shows, which is... everything you want, you know.
Yeah.
Were you involved with music when you were growing up? Because I've never really known when it all started for you.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of been forever. You know, I started playing music when I was young and started writing songs around the same time and started writing poetry and little stories and, you know, painting pictures and... I always just say around 10, because that just seems like the year it all happened.
Yeah. But,
you know, in school, I loved all that stuff. I love school. Mm. I love learning. And yeah, so I just kept on going since then. And I started kind of playing my own original songs when I was 18. And since then, I guess I was kind of a solo artist, I guess, and then was just kind of performing since then, and trying to do what everyone's trying to do, make albums and tour and share your stories wherever you can. So that's kind of what I always, I just played all over Melbourne and I guess when I finally got enough money to, like, record something, I did my first EP, I put a band together, and then, so I think, you know, to lots of people, I guess it's been the kind of last few years
of your albums.
Being visible.
Yes.
Yeah. But, that definitely kind of, you know, took off and went everywhere and... But yeah, it's just been a kind of slow, long kind of arc in my mind, because, you know, it's just been going forever, and I learn more and more each day and each year, and I find it really enjoyable.
Well, you can tell, you know, just with the music you make, and especially when I've seen you play live, you can absolutely tell that you're so focused as well, which is wonderful to watch, because everybody is like hanging on. You know, I just felt like people around me were really hanging on. A friend of mine actually saw you for the first time a few years ago, and he just was in tears, which I thought was... the best reaction, because I think he had been following you for a while around the EP phase, and then obviously seeing an artist live is really transformative. But at what point then did you realize you were an artist? Because I quite like the word when you're more visible to the public. But before all of that happened, before the albums were, you know, out into the world, when did you really realize that you were an artist, or that you at least could be an artist?
I don't know. Maybe, you know, it could have something to do with, like, that kind of, it's like I never allowed myself to, it's like that kind of self-negative talk. Like, I never allowed myself to be an artist or to be considered. I was like, well, I write songs, but I'm not a songwriter, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not good enough. Like,
yeah.
I'm not, you know, there's better people than me, and, you know, that kind of attitude. And I think, I mean, you know, I'm sure lots of people feel that, and it's a kind of weird environment, because so much of, you know, the stuff I write is... is me, you know, dealing with or coming to terms with these, like, kind of sometimes slightly negative inner things. And then it's like this weird juxtaposition of success from that, or people liking it, or I mean, the great side of it is obviously is people connecting with it in their own ways.
Sure.
And, you know, that's a really incredible outcome. But yeah, it's always this kind of weird this weird, like, flip side of, but yeah, I don't know when I would have started. I guess I just always kind of considered it what I do.
Mm.
And that's still how I feel, whatever title, you know, I put on it.
Right. It's
the only thing I can do.
Yeah. I mean, but it's definitely clear. But do you have a first concert that you went to maybe around that 10 age, or I'm not sure when was the first concert that you ever went to, and do you remember it at all? I know it's difficult to go back in time, but do you remember that first that first experience?
I don't think I saw much music until we had music around the house.
Mm.
Like CDs, and Dad listened to a lot of jazz records, and, you know,
amazing.
Every Sunday he would, like, play them really loudly, and that was always fun. But yeah.
Yeah,
I don't think I really saw much music until I was a teenager. I went to a few festivals, but, even that was kind of sensory overload. You know, and a lot, it was more about being out with, like, friends and,
of course,
and,
yeah.
You know, trying to stand close to the boy I had a crush on, and,
yeah.
And that kind of stuff. And then when I remember when I was 18, so, like, legally allowed to go to bars and stuff in Australia, I saw this band called Magic Dirt, who, they're like a band from Geelong, just out of Melbourne, kind of like, I don't know, rock, grunge, whatever it's called, punk,
right.
From like
yeah.
the 90s. And just, I think that was like a huge turning point for me, because it was this tiny venue. Adelita, she's like the front, you know, singer, guitarist, and I was so close, and I think it just really charged something inside of me, because it's kind of, it's already what I wanted to do, but it's like seeing that made it more realistic
and
close, and yeah.
That's amazing,
yeah.
Especially in such an intimate setting as well, because I know that obviously different phases can influence how you, you know, how you've made art and how you've created over the years. So it's really cool that it was a local band also. That's also great to,
yeah, totally.
To feel inspired, because I know also from my position as well, coming from a small-ish place. Well, I suppose coming from a scene outside of the world scene, like outside of New York, and London and LA. Do you feel like coming from outside a scene like that taught you a lot as well? Also just about yourself and how you approached it all?
Yeah, I think so. And because that show that I saw was, I wasn't in Melbourne then either yet. It was, that was in Hobart, which was, yeah, definitely a kind of, you know, smaller town, and lots of touring bands don't go there. So, yeah. And I think even, you know, people talk about kind of Australian bands having this different sound and different experience with the world and being so far away. You know, I think lots of bands don't even get to tour because it's so expensive and so far. And so, yeah, I think that in its own way, I guess kind of like small towns, or I think about it a lot, but I never kind of come up with a with an answer.
I'm sure people ask you all the time. I'm sure it's just, but it is fascinating, yeah. You know, because
it's, yeah, everyone talks about it and it's really cool. It's cool to kind of wonder, but I think, yeah, there is that sense of, it's almost a sense of carelessness in a way, like, you know, which kind of gives you the freedom to create something new and without, you know, without feeling like it's going to be kind of under the microscope. And some, you know, there is something maybe really magical about it.
Mm. Especially because the industry in Australia as well is a working machine. It's not like it doesn't function just because it's far away. Obviously, it's very expensive to tour around if you're a brand new band, but you can still get in the car and there's loads of places you can play within Australia. But, you know, obviously you're not getting the exposure that most bands would necessarily want, I suppose. But that even takes people from America or the UK or Europe a long time as well. I like what you said, that it's kind of secluded, so people are like free to just do whatever the hell they want. I really like that, because I kind of have always wondered what the hell is going on there. Because when I first started listening to like Triple J back when I was like living in London, I would like stream it. And I was just always so blown away, just because back in the day, Triple J kind of was like an old NME. You know, they really did.
Totally.
They did uncover some bands that I just thought all, and they would give radio play to bands that weren't signed, which is something.
Yeah.
You know, not you know, that's not what the industry likes. They like a very kind of cookie cutter brand. So I always thought that was pretty cool. Then when was the first show that you played? Was it also when you were 18? Because I know that's when obviously everything started for you. But do you remember that first show?
Yeah, I did. I did like an open mic.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah. Cool. So that's how I kind of started, I guess, for a few years. Me and my acoustic guitar, and and I played my own songs and probably a few covers, and and it was incredible, you know. And I did that around Hobart, and then I kind of did a couple of shows around Sydney, and then I moved to Melbourne, and I just kind of kept on doing that. And I remember, my first, I was incredibly nervous.
Oh, gosh, I'm sure.
And, all those things. And, you know, I definitely wasn't, like, a great performer or anything, but there was something in it that made me want to keep going. and then I moved to Melbourne and would just kind of contact every single venue that did live music and ask them for a gig.
Wow.
And I just kind of kept on doing that.
But I mean, that takes a lot of confidence in yourself, but also maybe you weren't even probably thinking about it back then. Because I know that when you start, when you're younger and you're starting with something, there's that like fire and that urgency.
Definitely.
But I just think that's wonderful that you started at open mics, because those are so often like the place where people try new stuff or know that they're going to get booed, or, you know, it's like a really volatile, it's a volatile space.
But at the same time, like, super encouraging, I think, because it's other people in the same position most of the time, like, you know, they're the audience and the performers. And, but yeah, it's funny, like, for someone who, I would not describe myself as overly confident, and in that it's almost like I think I've had periods in my life of bursts of like bursts of confidence where I do things like that, and it's kind of like all or nothing. And I definitely had a few periods of not playing at all, you know, like I was kind of so depressed and down on myself that I just didn't do anything. So, it's like a mix of those two things.
But it's quite nice as well to go through that, because otherwise I feel, especially because of the nature of what you sing about, if you don't have any sort of growth or any challenges, I can't imagine you feeling very fulfilled in the end of the day, whether it's low or high. Obviously, it's terrible to go through things that feel low and feel depressing, but I'm sure that there was a way out, you know. And again, that's why you create, you know. So how do you start a record label? How do you get into that? Because that's obviously a part of the industry which a lot of artists you know, they don't go near, because it's a whole different machine. So when did you decide to do that?
Well, I mean, I think I was, you know, my intention was to just do it in my own way, and I don't think I it started off small, and it was more just, you know, I made this CD, I'm going to sell it.
Right.
And
yeah.
And that's what, you know, that's what it was. And but I think, you know, I'd done so much by myself up until that point, and I really tried to reach out and to be part of, you know, communities, but I didn't quite get there. I didn't quite get accepted or whatever it was. I mean, not in a
bad way.
To say that in a bitter way, but I just hadn't met the right people or made the right friends yet. So, yeah, we were kind of in our own little kind of circle of musicians and people putting on shows, and it just kind of made more sense to do it that way, because there kind of was no other option. And, it's been an incredible seeing how it grows.
Yeah, and it's growing all the time, and I love how loyal people are toward it as well, which I think is something that, like, we don't see a lot of in these days. So I think it's really wonderful what you're doing, and some of the artists are just really fantastic.
Yeah.
You really feel like you've considered each and every one, and they just kind of work together as well as a unit, which is quite cool because they're all so different.
Yeah. It's quite inspiring to see and to be around.
When was it? 2000 and what are we in now? 2019. So 2017, you did an album and obviously a tour with Kurt Vile. And did that kind of change the pace for you as a performer? Not necessarily like what you learned from Kurt, but rather what did the experience of touring in a new unit offer? How did that kind of strengthen your, you know, relationship toward your own creativity?
Yeah, I think it was so important to me, because I was in a real kind of negative place and feeling very, what's the word? I don't know.
Uninspired.
So for that, yeah. And just, like low confidence, you know, that was the main, the main thing. And I think it's so important, and I've always kind of, my goal has always been to kind of do many different things and kind of put myself in lots of different positions, you know, whether it's playing with different people or making different types of music, or I don't think that there's kind of any reason to kind of stick with something if it's not working. So that tour was really incredible. Just, I guess, because it made me snap out of that mood a little bit. And I think, you know, I think even just working your brain in a different way, and it's only slightly different, you know, it's not like we rewrote the rules
of
music. But I think, you know, kind of having that, you know, obviously we were kind of sharing the kind of duo front and playing with different bands and playing different songs, playing his songs and cover songs, and it just kind of that little bit of brain flex. I think that's sometimes enough to kind of find like a new boost of creativity.
But I always found that there's some obviously decidedly like deadpan, almost comedic turns of phrase that you use, and unexpected twists, how you twist your lyrics. But I always found it quite funny, and obviously that's the joy of creating when you are trying to find some sort of way to get out of things. But I know this is a strange question, but I was just thinking now, was comedy something that you considered a direct inspiration at all to your music? Like, is that at all something that you connected to, the two and two together, or do you just happen to release and then people can take it the way that they want it?
I think it definitely is an influence, but like not, it's never anything I considered to do, if that's what you mean. But
yes.
But, and I think that comedy definitely, you know, provides a different insight, because a lot of the time, you know, it's more serious than,
absolutely,
you know, the most serious drama thing, but it's just presented in a kind of way that says, how ridiculous is this situation? And that's why it's funny. You know, whereas sometimes something that's really dramatic, like a TV show or a movie, it's almost comical in how serious and dramatic. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like
I think that's why the kind of sarcasm comes out in my writing, because you'll be sitting there like hours on end, you know, dreading about something really serious and how serious the world is and how serious I am as a writer. And then it you just kind of step outside and realize how ridiculous the situation is.
Yeah.
And, you know, how ridiculous we all are.
Mm.
And so it kind of provides this, this like flash of I don't know, I guess that's where the sarcasm comes from.
Yeah, but I also feel like the latest album, which I love, Tell Me How You Really Feel, the one that came out last year, I can't believe it's last year already, but I've been having like New Year PTSD still, because I'm still not over the fact that we've shifted. But I also felt like it was like a... how do I put this? Like a guide, like almost a way to get through things, even though they, you know, still potentially terrible. And obviously then going, if you're in the middle of tour and you're feeling like things are, you know, not really going your way, how do you then shift out of that? Because obviously I'm not expecting you to have all the answers, but I think because of the type of music that you make and you you know, are so acutely aware of your surroundings and curious as well, how do you then shift out of feeling beat down or challenged, or, you know, when the touring starts to get a little bit much, how do you really get out of that?
I don't know. Yeah, I joked. I kind of kept joking while I was writing it that it was like it sounded like a self-help album.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of how it felt. And it,
but
it
in
kept,
a good way.
Every time I would read some lyrics back, that's what it sounded like.
Yeah. So when you are then touring, do you have, because I know that you mentioned earlier in terms of obviously writing whenever it's coming and you just want to make sure that you are there to facilitate that, then when you're touring, do you have any sort of, I don't know, I'm always interested in superstitions, or not what you do before the show, but almost what you do after a show. I find those moments are really special. So is there anything specific that you do when you're performing? Maybe after a show, or if you have a certain...
Not really, you know, like it's pretty low-key.
Okay.
And it's normally, I kind of come off stage and just need to sit down and kind of gather my... I'm normally really out of breath and sweaty and quite exhausted.
Yeah.
There's been a couple of... I'm not, like, majorly superstitious or anything either, but there's been a couple of times, like, bigger occasions or, you know, something I'm really nervous about where I might put something in my pocket that, you know, that holds special meaning. Like, a couple of times recently I had this... I put this badge in my, like a, you know, like a pin, like a badge. That Patty, when I did some shows with Patty Smith a few years ago, and she,
oh my gosh,
she gave this badge to me.
Yeah.
And so, you know,
sorry, I'm having a reaction, like, because it's Patty Smith. I mean, that's crazy. What is it?
It's just like a, you know, it just says, like, Patti Smith horses or something,
yeah,
like that. Like, it's one of those, literally, like a 50-cent badge. But because she gave it to me backstage when she met me, or when I met her, you know, and she said, here, have this. And and so it just holds so much, you know, there's so much around it that goes into it, so... It's just a funny little... Sometimes I put that in my pocket if I'm having a bad day.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if I'm really anxious about something.
That's so wonderful. And I'm sure she'd be so happy to hear that you're doing that as well. But there is such power in, like, little things like that. I just feel... Especially when it comes from somebody as influential as her, I think... Somehow, maybe some of her energy has shifted into that little thing. And...
Definitely,
it's maybe quite,
yeah,
quite comforting also for you just to have it with you.
Yeah.
And I know that we have to rush off soon, but I wanted to ask about the, you mentioned, I don't know which social platform it was, speaking of social platforms, but you said that there was this initiative called Support Act, which obviously provides support to artists in the industry. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Just because I found it so interesting, especially coming from an industry in Australia like that. What does it do?
Yeah, it's Support Act. I think that it's pretty much for people who work in the music industry.
Okay.
Whether it's musicians or, you know, behind the scenes crew, I think. And it offers kind of counseling and, you know, support, but also I think, like, people who have fallen on hard times. I know, you know, a musician who might have had cancer and passed away, and their family, you know, sometimes they raise money for the family of that person,
right,
to kind of help support them. And it's a really incredible organization, I think. And I know there's similar ones around the world. Like in America, I think there's Music Cares, which I know, like, the Grammys do stuff for, or maybe they started it, I don't know. But Yeah, I think it's really important because obviously people in the music industry are kind of susceptible to, I mean, everyone is, but yeah, kind of creative and vulnerable people sometimes.
This Must Be the Gig is produced by Adam Kibble, and we'd like to thank Billy Yost and The Kickback for our theme song, Rube, and buy their music at thekickbackband.com. Lexi Frame for the artwork, Daniel Brater and Dean Berger for the additional sound design, and the Consequence Podcast Network, where you'll find a bunch of other amazing shows. Hey! If you've listened this far, why not go the extra mile and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcasts? Your comments provide valuable feedback for us, and it helps other people find us too. For information on new episodes, be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at TMBTGpod. And generally, just irritate everyone you know about the show. Thanks again. Miss you already.
Consequence Podcast Network.